Here's another book that's inspired generations of people to get outdoors. Walden by Henry David Thoreau. It's his famous meditation on living alone in the woods. Thoreau's one of those American icons that everyone seems to know something about. But he turns out to have been a lot more complicated in real life. And now, just in time for his 200th anniversary, Laura Dasso Walls has written the first new full-length biography of Thoreau in a generation. She describes him as a man torn between his desire to head off to the woods, shuck civilization, live in his little cabin, and also his desire to be part of the community, be a political activist, campaign against slavery, call for civil disobedience. Laura told Steve Paulson that Thoreau struggled with the contradiction.
How can he walk away from town, away from politics, away from the social storm that's breaking around them, to the pond, to nature? And it's a real question for him. He's not saying these two are compatible. I can do the one and I can do the other comfortably. He's challenging himself, saying, how dare I go out into nature when I need to be here on the front lines fighting against slavery? And he recovers himself to say that he does go out into nature and finds there a kind of symbolic, it's a white water lily, which for him is the Buddhist symbol of enlightenment.
And it's worth pointing out that, I mean, he was fairly unusual in this regard. I mean, someone who really looked at these, it drew inspiration and wisdom from these Eastern spiritual traditions, not just Christianity.
Yes. He saw Eastern spiritual traditions, Buddhism and Hinduism, most importantly to him, as living traditions, not faith traditions in the deep past or somewhere else. Well, this gets to transcendentalism.
Right. And I was going to ask about that. I mean, so he's associated with the transcendental movement. I mean, most famously associated with his mentor, Ralph Waldo Emerson. How would you describe sort of the essence of transcendentalism?
You have to start by putting it in a religious framework, which works very well in this moment, early 19th century in America, where you've got liberal ministers arguing for religious faith in a modern world. And the founding voice of transcendentalism insists that each person has what he calls a likeness to God within us. And he'll extend it to say that this divine principle, you can see it in a leaf, you can see it in a creature. We're all creatures of God. We all have this divine principle. But the human being is the one who has the ability to fully cultivate all the latent capacities within and flourish in the world.
When you say that, it sounds so contemporary. You know,
it does.
To use a phrase that's popular these days, spiritual but not religious. You know, people who don't go to church but are still deeply spiritual. I mean, it sounds like exactly what you just described.
This is when it starts. Emerson was a minister who leaves the church to become a kind of secular prophet for a modern America. Thoreau becomes first his disciple and grows up to become a rival, and Thoreau refuses to go to church. Now, his family's very religious. They do go to church, and they're very critical of their son who does not. But that was exactly the crisis that he faced. He felt that churches were not responding to this deeper inner truth. Churches of the time in his town, for instance, would not condone discussion of slavery or anti-slavery issues, and he felt that was wrong. So he and actually his older sister both refused to enter a church.
Now, you said that Thoreau had been a disciple of Ralph Waldo Emerson, then became his rival. We have to talk about this. I mean, sort of this fascinating story. So Emerson was this towering intellectual figure at the time and lived in the same town. Thoreau lived in his house for a long time. In fact, he was he kind of looked after Emerson's children for a while. Emerson was his benefactor. You know, he wants to please Emerson. Emerson thinks he's the great student.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, he returns after graduating to his hometown. And in the meantime, here's the son of Concord, you know, born and grew up there. And somebody new has moved into town just down the street. And who is it but this absolutely gigantic intellectual figure, Ralph Waldo Emerson, whose work he's been reading. And there he is down the street. And of course, Thoreau wants very much to be admitted into this elite intellectual circle that's gathering around Emerson. But he's the son of a pencil maker and doesn't want to enter as a kind of charity case. He wants to enter as an equal. So he tries to catch Emerson's attention by writing a poem, a very stylish poem that will turn Emerson's head. And that works. And eventually Emerson opens the circle to him when he says Thoreau should come hear him lecture in Boston. Thoreau walks into Boston, 17 miles, to hear Emerson lecture. And so from then on, Thoreau is right at the heart of the family circle and becomes Emerson's associate, apprentice, yes, handyman.
And it's worth pointing out that the land on Walden Pond, where Thoreau went to live for 2 years, was Emerson's land.
Right. Emerson bought that. The railroad came through, railroad speculators. He came upon a group of railroad speculators as they were about to purchase that land and develop it. Emerson bought it on the spot and gave Henry permission to build his long dreamed of cabin on the pond. So, of course, Thoreau's goal is not to sound like Emerson, not to be an imitator. It's kind of like that land on Walden Pond. Emerson creates the conditions for originality, but then Thoreau has to build his own house on it. And having built this physical house, he's building his intellectual house, discovering his own voice as a writer. And that needs breaking away from Emerson, so there's a real long period of tension. It's almost, gosh, if I added it up, at least a decade.
So what did that mean to break away? I mean, did he reject some of Emerson's ideas? Or, I mean, was this a philosophical difference or a difference in temperament?
It's partly a difference in temperament. Thoreau was very passionate, very empathetic, and Emerson had a kind of cool personality, tended to put people at a distance. Many people experience this with Emerson, but it drives Thoreau crazy. So he develops a very kind of crusty oppositional stance to Emerson, and the two, they love it. They get along together because they're always arguing. They're always getting each other's goat, right? And this sense of kind of one-upping each other, for a while it becomes tense because Emerson becomes very famous, and Emerson is a towering global figure. Thoreau is literally living in his shadow and wants to find his own voice, and he finds his way, and finding his way to Walden Pond, as I say, building the house becomes a gesture of building his intellectual house and breaking away.
And to some degree, I mean, my sense is that Thoreau lived out some of the ideas that Emerson talked about.
Even Emerson agrees that Thoreau lived out some of his own best ideas. And the difference between them is Thoreau is in love with the physical world. He's a sensual person who thinks nothing of stripping himself naked and walking into a stream, shocking everybody as he walks downstream naked because he wants to feel the water on his flesh. And that sense of physicality, of literally just loving the immersion in the world and making that a condition of his writing. So how can you convey that in print? How can you write to load your text with all the squishy, muddy, hot, lively details of the world? And Thoreau wants to attune himself so exactly to the physical world that this becomes the inspiration for his scientific quest. So he becomes a proto-ecologist, as we would say today. Mm-hmm.
You say at one point in your biography that Thoreau's 2 years and 2 months at Walden Pond was an iconic work of performance art.
Yes.
What did you mean?
So he builds the house. The moment he starts cutting trees down on the shore of Walden Pond, people start coming by because he's right by the main road.
Right, so he's not isolated, you know, living in solitude out in the wilderness. I mean, he's just right on the edge of town.
It is shockingly close to being right on the edge of town and right there where people can see him. So one of the things I argue is that he's more conspicuous now than he ever was when he was just another guy on the sidewalks of Concord. Everybody can see him, and they walk up to him, and they say, "Henry, what are you doing?" And he tells them. And the moment that that starts, which is the moment he starts to swing an axe, he discovers that he has to find a way to communicate answers to these questions. They're real questions, and he isn't sure of the answers himself.
Well, and I mean, there's that famous line, he went there to live deliberately.
Right.
I mean, is it as if he's going to examine everything that he does, the why of everything he does?
Exactly. And it's not that he came there with answers that he's going to purvey to all these people who are drawn to him. He comes there with questions, and he's a very shy person himself, very introverted, so he has to be ready to address people. And sometimes he's not. Sometimes he's rude to people because he needs a space.
You say no American writer is more place-centered than Henry Thoreau. How so?
He thought, as any aspiring writer might think, that he could detach himself from his home environment and go somewhere else to practice his craft. So he goes to New York, tries to break into the New York literary market, and it's a disaster on so many levels. For one thing, nobody in New York is buying writing from an unknown author. And so he starts to long to return, is desperately homesick, and the instant he gets back home, he's out and it's winter and he's chasing a fox and loving it, feeling, I am where I am supposed to be. And through the years, you watch the kind of writing that he does. He takes a little notebook with him wherever he goes, and he's always taking the pencils that he made with him and making little notes on these pieces of paper that he then takes and writes up in his journal, and the journal becomes a foundation for all the great literary works that are still read today. That immersion of writing as you see, as you experience, everything that he touched with his eyes or with his hands, with his body, became part of his mind. And so in the later years, he walks out into the landscape and it's all a part of him. And people who know the landscape said, it's Henry himself spread all around us. We take walks in the woods and Henry is everywhere.
Laura Dasso Walls. She's the author of a major new biography of Henry David Thoreau, and she was talking with Steve Paulson.